and welcome to... What if I talked like that? That'd be so weird. It's not so weird because it's pretty close to how I talk. Well, how about another ramble? It's been a while. I've been out of the state, out of a state of mind as well. So let's go. Went to Phoenix, Arizona, and had a pretty good trip. We were going out for the FGA conference. That's the Free Grace Alliance conference. We used to have kind of an open invitation to go to the GES conference. That's the Grace Evangelical Society conference. Used to do various projects with them, but we no longer have that invitation. Don't want to really go into that, but yeah, that's all I'll say about that. We don't have that invitation. So we're exploring new relationships, not because we didn't start trying to connect with new groups because our theology changed or something. It was just we no longer have the invitation to the other, you know, kind of sizable group that we used to belong to. So we're trying to make new friends. I said our theology hasn't changed. I mean, I don't know. Maybe our theology has shifted a little, but not so much that we couldn't be acceptable, you know, to the previous group we associated with. In my opinion, it seemed more interpersonal. So we go to the FGA conference now, and I could use the word small. I think it's kind of a small gathering of people who are, I don't know, like-minded, I guess I would say. And I just realized I didn't plug the power in on my computer. Did I? No, I did not. Hold on. Boom. Now we got juice. Yesterday, the power went out in my office, and I was glad I was on a laptop because I was, like, right straight up in the middle of a creative process, so... the FGA, conference was in Phoenix. We did a unique thing. We sometimes sell books, and I just don't like it. I don't like selling books. I'd rather give them away. It's fun to give them away, because everybody that comes up, you know, you can give them something. It's super cool. So we packed enough books and tracts in our, bags and flew out to Phoenix and they gave us an opportunity to get up in front of the crowd and introduce ourselves because they call it a ministry minute, I think. And so Sean Lazar and I got up and did our shtick. And as part of that, we said, hey, come by our table and get a book. We're giving books away free. And we got rid of every single book, every single track, everything. I mean, I don't know that that's ever happened, even when we've given stuff away. So that was cool. That to me is worth the connection because that's the main thing we do is we write stuff, you know. So yeah, that was exciting. Got a really cool opportunity to meet up with a new friend. And I use the word friend intentionally here because I really think this guy is going to be a good buddy. His name is Pater. Pater Frenzen. And he's a YouTuber. He's a, he's got ChristianGeekCentral.com. I think that's what it is. I should look it up as I'm telling you because you may want to look it up. It's pretty cool. Let's see. ChristianGeekCentral.com. Is that right? It's loading. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So he's got this, calls it Spirit Blade Productions, entertainment and resources for Christian geeks. So it's cool. It's just like, he reviews video games and movies and maybe TV shows. And he also does a Bible study, I think on Mondays. Let me go to his YouTube channel, see what his... Um, Oh, he's on his channel. He says free grace theology and why geeks need it. I need to watch that. That's pretty cool. So, he's got, yes, you can say that to God, healthy versus unhealthy sex, sad or anxious, settle in. So he's doing ministry on YouTube, which is cool. It's just, mostly on YouTube. He also has a Patreon account. But the way we connected with him is, this summer, I'm on a different trip. We were in Michigan, doing the Realm Makers Conference. I write sci-fi and fantasy as part of our ministry. And so we wanted to do, we've done it a couple of times. We wanted to do a Christian fiction conference and, you know, so I had a table there and it wasn't really profitable to be there. From a book sales standpoint, we did sell books, but just not enough to make it worth driving up to Michigan, you know? But anyway, when we show up, this guy, comes over like almost immediately and, says hello and says, hey, I'm a free grace guy and I listen to your radio show. We used to do a radio show with Grace Evangelical Society that Sean Lazar and I were on. I would just do the intros. I wouldn't that involved, but would do the intros and then he would do the show with Bob Wilkin. And so Pater, this guy who's from Arizona was in Michigan because his sister has a book and they had a table there. So he came over and introduced himself and said, you know, we have a free grace connection. We're both free grace, which is just a theological perspective. And he said, so he was listening to the radio show because he comes from a free grace background, but he said, you know, I was on one of the episodes and just, there was a brief mention that I write sci-fi and fantasy. But I didn't really talk about it on the show. In fact, they asked me, do you want to talk about it? And I was like, not in the least, not, it just didn't feel like the right place to talk about it, you know, cause I was there to talk about, some of the theology stuff I'd written. And so he heard that on that radio show and he thought, oh, cool. What, you know, so he came over and we connected and I was like, oh man, I like this guy. He's a neat guy. And he's, you know, coming from a similar, you know, free grace perspective. So that was 6 months ago, I guess. That was in the summer. And then fast forward to being in Phoenix this week. It didn't even occur to me until like halfway through our trip. Wait a minute. That Pater guy is out here in Arizona somewhere. And I couldn't remember exactly where I was because I had met somebody else from Tucson and I thought maybe he's in Tucson. So anyway, I dug up his contact and he was in Mesa, which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, if someone is listening and knows something about Arizona, but he's in Mesa, Arizona, which I think is in the valley there with Phoenix and, well, whatever else is in the valley. I could be totally wrong about that, but anyway, we met up and dude, it was awesome. This guy is, I mean, we are on like the same brainwave, it felt like. So Sean sat in with us for a little while, but he had to go to a session, I think. And so me and Pater, I mean, I don't know how long we talked. It might have been a couple hours. We talked about all kinds of interesting things and, I don't know. It felt like, you know, when you see somebody who, you kind of feel like you've been friends for a long time, even though you just met them. It was that kind of thing, you know, like for instance, one of the things, and I don't know if, I hope he's okay with me talking about this, but he seems very open. And so I doubt it's a big deal, but I occasionally have this kind of anxiety about living forever. You know, I believed in Jesus. I'm just confident to have eternal life. And, that I'm going to be with the Lord forever and other believers. But sometimes that gives me anxiety to try to think about just you know, living forever. It doesn't give me anxiety right now. And I don't know why it hits me weird at certain times. And I brought that up with various people over the years, and I've never encountered another person who deals with that except, see, I told him nobody else, but it occurred to me later. There was a short episode where my daughter, I think, was having some of that type of anxiety, but it seems like she's moved on from it. So I'm not sure if it might have been something else. But anyway, talking to Pater, he's had that same sort of thing, you know, just, and he had some actual ways to deal with it. I was like, it was an important meeting for me. I guess I'd put it that way. It was a valuable meeting for me. So I think that's enough about him for now, because I want to have him on here. I think next Wednesday we're going to see if we can make this recording platform work where we both can be on and do kind of a joint podcast and just talk. We'll see how it pans out. So that'll be cool. I'm looking forward to that. And then after that, I was thinking I want to get Dane Allen, who's another YouTuber that that our ministry works with, or that he works with us. Actually, it's kind of interesting. He's partially independent, but he's also partially supported by our ministry and others as well. You know, he's growing support. So I thought that'd be good to get him on and we can talk about what he does. He's another Free Grace guy and really cool. Cool dude. So anyway, I don't plan to like constantly have guests on, but I thought it'd be good occasionally to do that because it's fun to ramble with friends, you know. And then I thought Sean Lazar would be good to have Sean Lazar on. And then as we kind of get the format, then, you know, it'd be fun to just have whoever, you know, different people. Maybe some of you guys that are listening. Hey, that'd be cool just to like, we'll just get anybody that's interested to just who wants to be on and we'll talk. So did Phoenix, came back, got back really late. So, I did a silly thing and it's the kind of thing that I do, but so used to Sean, my ministry partner, he would plan the airfare. He would get the plane tickets and arrange for travel and stuff like that. Well, he's now working with us part-time, but he's also a full-time pastor. And that has just taken all, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of his bandwidth. So I thought, well, I'll do the planning. So it went pretty well, but there were a few oddities with me doing the planning. So one was the flight times. What was I thinking? I mean, I got us into Phoenix like early in the morning. I mean, we had to get up at, I think we were up at 3:30 a.m. in Dallas to get to the airport. And then we got, there's a 2-hour time difference. So then we got to Phoenix. I mean, I don't know if it was like at 8 a.m. or something, but when we made it to the church, again, I thought the thing started at 9 a.m. So it's like, hey, not bad, Lucas. But then I realized, no, it starts at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So we just sort of hung around the church. That wasn't the weirdest thing though. The weirdest thing was I thought I had rented a car and instead I accidentally rented Dijon, a Moroccan driver who is a guy who professionally drives. And I'm not talking about an Uber. That would have been a lot more cost effective. This was one of those guys that drives fancy people around, you know, wealthy folks, like a private driver in a private black Escalade or whatever it was. So he starts texting me, you know, when we're headed over there. I'm like, what is this? I thought I rented a car. He's like, no, you definitely rented me. So he drove us from the airport And then back to the airport. But that meant we didn't have a vehicle during the event, which was kind of funny. So we had to deal with that. So then we wound up getting Ubers and borrowing rides from people at the conference. And so I don't know. It would have been a good price. Dijon, for what we got, we could have done Uber for much cheaper. But because I thought I was renting a car, I thought, man, that is a good price. I think it was like $137. I think that's probably right. Something like that. For the round trip of him driving us to and from the airport. And I thought, that's really good for a car. And do you know why I thought I was renting a car? Not because the title I clicked on said rent a car. It's because it had a picture of a car. This has always been my downfall. It's a picture, you know, if there's a picture, of something, I'm more likely to let the picture dominate over the title. And I remember as I was clicking on it, it's a picture of a car, which looked like the kind of picture they normally put up for renting a car. And I remember glancing at the title, not reading it and thinking, that's a really long title for whatever I'm clicking on. And I kind of like, you know, scanned it quickly and was like, I don't understand what that's saying. But it's a picture of a car, so certainly I'm renting a car. Well, that was not correct. But it was okay. He was an interesting guy. He was a guy of the Islamic faith from Morocco, so we connected with him. Then, you know, when we got back, another interesting thing, I happened to be in our camper van because I wanted to leave our minivan to Krista, my wife, for the days that I was gone, because she runs the kids around and whatnot. So I took our camper van to go to Dallas to fly out. So that meant I had our camper van when I got home. So I took Sean home after we got in. It was late. It might have been 10 or 11. I mean, it was really late. And dropped him off, and then I started driving, and I got really sleepy, which is what happens when it's like midnight, you know, or whatever. By the time I was heading home, it was midnight. But because I had our camper van, I thought, well, I can just pull off and sleep. I haven't done this before. You know, I've camped in it, you know, at official campsites, but I haven't just like slept somewhere. So I pulled off at Bucky's, the one that's in Terrell near Dallas, and was going to sleep there. But then I was looking around and there was like signs that seemed to be implying you're not supposed to sleep there. So I moved on from there and I found a rest area, just one of those roadside rest areas, you know, like picnic place. And so, I pulled off there and I slept there a couple hours. And then I got up at like 2 or 3, I think, and got behind the wheel again and started driving. And I was like, oh, this is not good. It wasn't like my head was bobbing, but I just felt out of it. I was like, I guess I'm sleepy. I don't know. I feel weird. I just kind of felt like my mind was out of my body. It's kind of like when you're sleepwalking or something. So I was like, ooh, this is not good. I need to get off. So I got off the road and then just went to a gas station and just parked in a gas station and then slept until morning, slept until, I think I was driving at 5 a.m. again. I think that's probably when. So that was new to me, you know, and I'd kind of had it in my mind that there was something scary about that, but it was no problem at all. I mean, I think it might depend on where you park, but, it was just no problem. It was, I just didn't, you know, crawled in the back and just didn't even think about it. And so anyway, I'm a gas station sleeper now, I suppose. I gather that truck drivers are doing this all the time, you know, so anyway, so that was kind of cool. I guess in other Lucas news, I am approaching being done with my music album. I, after like 15 years, started recording music again and felt kind of like I had to get permission from my family. It's kind of weird, but I just felt like, you know, I know that doing music really absorbs a lot of my time. And So I just kind of felt like I had to make sure with them. So, you know, kind of lined all that up and then it was game on. And so I've been working on it for a few months now and I have 11 songs I think that I'm going to do. I might cut one, but, it'll just depend on whether they feel delightful to me or not. And these songs are not songs that most people will have heard. I did some kind of like free grace worship songs a while back that were honestly pretty bland. They didn't have much of my heart in them, I guess you could say. So for this project, I've gone back and I've pulled up songs. Really, a lot of them are just songs of high emotion for me, you know. So I've got that about done, but I did something kind of funny. I just was like, man, I really want some brass on this thing, you know, trumpet, trombone, something like that. And so I know some people that can play brass, but that's not what I wanted. I didn't want to bring in session players. So I ordered a soprano trombone, because what I thought was, I thought a trombone, it like mentally seems like it should be the easiest, right? It's, you sliding the thing around, you're doing the partials, it's like, it should be pretty straightforward. I asked a trombone player friend and he said, it's still, it's like any other brass instrument, it still takes a lot of practice. So I may not be able to do it. It comes in today. I'm really jazzed up. See what I did there? It comes in today, but there was a few weird things about it too. This is kind of the world I live in, right? So this is sort of similar to the hiring the driver. I got excited, you know, I just got like excited about it and I was like, I've got to get me a trombone. And by the way, this is not the first trombone I bought. I bought a trombone years ago to give to my friend who played trombone in marching band but didn't have a trombone, and I found one in a pawn shop and I was like, I gotta get it for him, he'll love it. And I got it for him and I think he was kind of like, why did you get me a trombone? What in the world? You know, come to think of it, he probably still has that trombone. I should have asked if I could use it. Anyway, I wanted a soprano trombone. I'm sorry. Yeah, soprano trombone, because I wanted that higher, you know, pitch range. But I wanted the slide. I just thought that would be cool. I don't know. Maybe it isn't cool, but I think it's cool. So I think I'm probably going to wind up delaying the album for a while because, I got to learn how to play this trombone first. The thing about doing studio music though is like, you don't have to be like, I'm not going to be doing trombone solos or anything. I'm just trying to add a little bit of texture, you know, and I've got MIDI brass instruments in my software, like software instruments, and software instruments are good for certain things, but like for the brass, I just can't seem to quite get comfortable with it. I don't know why. So, I do know why. It doesn't feel real and I'm not sure. It's hard to put my finger on exactly why it doesn't feel real, but it doesn't. The software instruments for like a bass guitar are pretty good. Like you just wouldn't know the difference. For drums, they're pretty good. If you get a decent set of voices, but for brass, I don't know. They just stick out. It's like, can't get comfortable with it. So I thought I'd rather have less quality brass parts that are real than like complex brass parts that are fake, you know, so hence ordering the thing. Well, okay. So the other day I'm thinking like, I want to order a soprano trombone, but I don't want to spend a bunch of money on it because I'm no good at it. And I don't, you know, you could spend a lot of money. And it seemed like the starting price for them was about $300 to $400. Makes sense. And then I discovered that there's plastic instruments, plastic brass instruments. They're not literally brass. They're literally plastic, but they're brass instruments. They're made out of PVC of some kind. And I got excited about that because those actually sound pretty good. They're cheaper because they're plastic. And when I say plastic, I don't mean low quality. I mean like there's actually marching bands that use them. You know, professionals probably still are using literally brass instruments, but So I got excited about that, thinking maybe that's the thing, but they didn't have it in a soprano range. They had a mini. The company was called, what was it called? P-Bone, I think. Is it P-Bone? Oh, probably for plastic trombone, I bet. But anyway, P-Bone. And they've got plastic trumpets and plastic all kinds of stuff. It's really cool. I like it. But anyhow, I thought about ordering one of those. Cause that, you know, it's a legit company. People are doing that. But they didn't have it in the soprano range. And so I was like, no, I want soprano range. Because the soprano range is like the same note range as like a trumpet or maybe close to a cornet, I think. So anyway, I found a website that had just like dirt cheap, soprano trombone. Not a hundred even. It was $90. I was thinking, this is going to be a piece of junk, but it's $90 and my playing quality is going to be at about a $70 range, you know, so it kind of fit. So I ordered that and it was weird. There was no shipping cost. It said shipping was free. I was like, what? That doesn't add up. Literally. And I didn't get a confirmation email and I didn't get a confirmation that it had been shipped after a few days. So I sent them a message and just nothing. And then I went and I thought, wait a minute. Is this a trombone scam? This is a trombone scam. I looked online and, and you know, there's sites you can check the scamminess of other webs, you know, of websites or whatever. And so I checked and sure enough the site said it was a very high probability that it was a scam. And I was like, what in the world that, I mean, scammers have gone so deep now that they're scamming soprano trombones. I mean, like I understand scamming like really common things, but like I just imagine the scammer sitting back there thinking, oh, you know how we're going to really get those Americans. They order soprano trombones by the droves. We're going to make a soprano trombone scam. I mean, it's just the most ridiculous thing. So it is remotely possible that it wasn't a scam. It said it was like 95% chance that this website is a scam. It occurred to me later that it might not be a scam. It might be one of those kind of like low quality drop ship kind of sites where they're skimming off, you know, skimming basically. But I just like, you can't ship a trombone across the world from whatever country, India or whatever, for free, you know. So I contacted PayPal and said, look, I think I got taken in by a scam. You know, can we refund it? And they immediately refunded it. So I was like, game on, man. That was awesome. So thank you, PayPal. They did a good job. So they refunded it. And then within like 8 minutes, I had found a different site, slightly more expensive, but not terrible. It was like $139. And, for a soprano trombone, I thought, well, that's more, but better than the $400 versions. And it's probably a lower quality instrument, but that's okay. I'm just learning, you know. So their shipping was $46 because it was coming from Germany. It's like, ooh, boy, it's a little steep. It's kind of small, but I guess, you know, it's coming from Germany. So paid that. So what does that put us at? That's basically 140 plus 140. That put us at like a close to 190 or so. It's like, okay, still less than these others that you could get from Amazon with free shipping, you know? Well, it is coming in today and I just got an email a little bit ago that I have to pay tariff, duty, tax, something. I'm not sure. I like duty tax. Yeah, that sounds about right. I don't mean DUT, whatever. I just duty tax. It's what it sounds like. It's kind of frustrating. I mean, I get that there's things changing with how things are being imported and the cost structure and the tariffs and whatever. And I don't know if I'm against it or for it. Probably I'm for it when I'm not ordering something and then against it when I've ordered my soprano trombone. So because, and here's the thing though, it's going to show up at the UPS place at about noon and I'm going to owe $82, $82 for, I mean, I've already paid for shipping. And this is the thing that bothers me is like the company in, I guess, Germany, they said that the shipping was $46. And they might say, well, but this extra cost is like duties and tax. It's like, it's shipping to me. It's the amount of money it costs to get it from your facility to my house. That is shipping, you know, so call it whatever you want. That needs to be included because I would not have accepted, because what does that put us at? Let's see, $82 plus $46. Good grief. I mean, we're like, golly, I paid as much for the shipping as the instrument. Almost, pretty close. So I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have ordered it if I knew that. But now they got that. Now they got me because it's sitting there, you know. I guess I could, goodness, I don't know. I guess I could say, no, I don't accept it. But they probably wouldn't refund it, you know, because they did ship it and they have a confirmation it arrives. I'm annoyed, but you know, once I pull that brass instrument out and it looks beautiful and sounds perfect because I'll be so experienced, it'll all be worth it. I'm just imagining the moment that I pull it out and just start playing it. It's going to be so awful. It's just going to be so awful. I have never played a brass instrument except like 12, 15, 20 years ago. I don't know when. My brother had a trumpet. He was a good trumpet player and I thought I wanted to record something with it. So I recorded like one note at a time and chopped it up and edited it into like a trumpet part for like a pseudo ska song that I was working on. So didn't really qualify as playing. It was just sort of like, you know, toot a note at a time and then, you know, chop it on the computer. So anyway, that's kind of a goofball thing. I don't know. I get excited about things and a lot of times it's because I'm in a hurry, you know, I'm in a hurry and I do a thing and then I realize I didn't do the thing quite right. So anyway, we'll have a trombone soon, I think. And, boy, it'll be beautiful. I don't know if you ever heard somebody practicing a brass instrument for the first time, but it is not a nice sound. Although I think it's nicer than practicing a reed instrument for the first time. I mean, that's like killing cats, man. It's like a bag of cats, you know, just, ugh, boy. Anyway, so I didn't order a reed instrument, but that's probably coming. I will spend my half hour to master the trombone and then it'll be clarinet. I'm just going to go straight for, I wonder if there's like a piccolo clarinet. It's like whatever's the highest, most shrill. My kids have a recorder, which, I actually have some experience with beyond the fourth grade recorder class that they do. I had recorded with recorder and actually played recorder live in a band. It sounds so silly, but, I played drums for the band, but then when they would do a slow song, we would turn the reverb up to 11 and, I would play recorder and it probably was terrible, but they let me do it. And some people said they thought it was nice. So, but man, that my youngest son, he'll get his hands on that recorder and he will just blow it as hard as he can. No fingers on the holes. So it's the highest note, you know, and the other day he was in there just blasting it. It's like, oh my man, you have got to go somewhere else. We cannot. So he went in his room and he closed the door and just was in there just like ruining his ears, you know, just as loud as he could go. I'm like, does that not hurt? How do you not just regret every single note you play? I can't, I don't know. I think they must have a higher tolerance. He's also figured out that if he screams at the top of his lungs, that his sister and his brothers will laugh, you know, so he started to do that. And his voice is like the recorder, except way louder, you know, it's that kind of pitch range. So, oh, man. Okay, well, hey, you know what? I think I've rambled through my recent history. Let's look at the verse of the day, and I think we'll wrap up with that. I'm kind of doing it out of order. Hey, by the way, I don't watch the news anymore. And you're probably thinking, oh, you mean you don't watch it much? I mean, I don't pay attention to the news. I've just kind of completely pulled out. Most of my news I get on accident. Oh, that's an interesting idea. It's like accidental news, but I get it on accident or somebody tells me about what's going on. But I saw that there was a peace treaty between the Palestinians and the Israelis and that we had something to do with it. So that's cool. I need to go and find out what that's about. Is it sad to you guys that I don't know these things? I feel so happy not knowing what's going on in the world. You know, like my focus is, I'm trying to keep my focus is like doing ministry, keeping my mind on, you know, things that are present to me, you know, and I'm not trying to be a political pundit, you know, I'm not trying to be a commentator. And so I've just found that I feel more content, I think, not paying attention to the news, but I know there's times when I'll probably need to, but at the moment, it's been pretty good. Hey, the verse of the day is from John 6. I love John 6. Let's see. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. Yeah, that's cool. I like that. In my book, Eternal Life, yeah, it's basically a study of the Gospel of John as it has, as it is related to his offer of eternal life. And one of the things that I noticed was that there are, I think there were 7 nevers. You'll never thirst. You'll never hunger. You'll never, I think there's a never die in there. So there's 7 nevers. This is 2 of them. Is this 2 of them? Never hunger, never thirst. So this is 2 of them. Now this passage though, if you go and read John 6, it's like we pull these, yawn. Sorry. We pull these verses out. It's a beautiful verse. I'm the bread of life. but the passage is actually kind of painful because this is the point in John where a lot of his followers stopped following him. And it was because of this phrase and a couple of others. And it seemed like he was intentionally running those off who were following him because he had fed them. He had fed them earlier in the chapter and then they, you know, they came and found him, and he's like, you came to me because you want your bellies filled, but I am the bread, you know, and they're like, I don't get it. And it's like, he just doubled down on it and really cranked the screws, so to speak, to the point where he said, you gotta eat me, man. You know, you gotta drink my blood. You gotta eat my skin, eat my flesh. And, they didn't get it. I mean, it was offensive to him. I mean, you think about like ever since the time of Noah, it's been part of the faith, the Jewish faith, that we don't drink blood. You know, we don't even eat meat with blood still in it. You know, it has to be bled out and cooked out, you know, and so that was really offensive. Now he was using it as a metaphor, of course. And if they were listening closely, they probably would have picked up on it, but they were just offended. And telling them, you got to eat my flesh, is like, you know, you got to cannibalize me. I mean, it's just like, they didn't want to hear it because they didn't want to hear it. I don't know. They, you know, I mean, certainly he's standing there. You would think that they would be like, clearly you're talking in metaphors. What's the metaphor mean? You know, and if they listened, they would have caught it. Like this one, he defines his terms. You know, he says, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. and he who believes in me shall never thirst. So he's like, he peppers it in there, what he's talking about. He's talking about believing in him, you know, and they didn't believe in him. And it says in that chapter that many of his followers, his disciples, turned and followed him no more. But because of that, he has this really interesting conversation with Peter, and probably all of them are standing there, but Peter sometimes kind of acts as the spokesman for the disciples when he's talking to Jesus. And Jesus says to him, you know, do you guys want to leave too? And Peter's like, where will we go? You're the one that has the words. I like this phrase. He says, you have the words of eternal life. You know, and that's a really interesting phrase. It's like Peter had understood by this point that eternal life was in the word. You know, it's like he was speaking words that could give people eternal life if they believed him. You know, if they believed him, if they believed in him and, you know, received what he was offering. So, you know, Peter got it. Peter and the others, and Jesus kind of confirms there at the end of chapter 6 that, like, yeah, you get it. But then he says this kind of haunting thing, and I can't quote it directly, but he says basically, like, one of you is a devil. Whoa. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you guys believe, but one of you is a devil. And then John, the writer, kind of explains what he's talking about. It says, like, he knew who didn't believe from the beginning. Who didn't believe in Jesus. And I guess it means, you know, didn't believe in him as the Son of God, as the Messiah. And then it mentions Judas Iscariot, the one who would betray him. And so we take that to mean that maybe Judas didn't believe from the beginning. And that's one of the things that people ask about free grace. It's like, well, you're saying Judas could be saved. And I'm like, yes, obviously Judas can be saved, you know. And it's possible it's possible in John 6 that that's not what it's saying, because it doesn't directly say Judas did not believe from the beginning, but it kind of implies that maybe that's what it's saying. But let's say that Judas did believe. Well, Judas is saved then. Now, I actually think Judas didn't believe because of this verse and then one in Acts where it says Judas went to the place he belongs or something like that, you know, and so it kind of sounds like it's saying he's going to be in hell. But look, he's not in hell because he betrayed the Lord. Peter betrayed the Lord, and Peter's not going to be in hell. If he's in hell, it's because he didn't believe. You know, that's what John 6 is getting at. It's like he didn't believe from the beginning. There were those that just didn't believe, even though they're standing there with the Lord who's doing miracles, you know. And so Judas is an interesting character. Be an interesting character to write a book about. I wrote a book about Thomas, and I found that really fascinating. Judas would be very fascinating. It's hard to imagine. How do you spend that time with the Lord and, you know, just not believe? I don't know. It's interesting that in John 6 as well, it says that Jesus knew, this is after he fed the was it 5,000 or 6,000? It says that Jesus knew that they were going to take him and make him king by force. And then in that same chapter, he's turning it around saying, you guys don't believe. So there were people who were willing to make him king, and it seems like they may have been the same people. They may have been the same people that were going to try to make him king by force. They believed something about him. You know, they probably believed that if you can feed 5,000, you can feed an army. Let's take on the Romans. He's like, that's not how we're doing it, guys. I don't know. Whatever they were thinking, they were going to make him king by force, but it seems that they weren't believing, some of them at least, were not believing in him in the way that you have to, you know, to have salvation. So what does it mean that he's saying, I am the bread of life? I don't know. It's like, you want life, you need me. Interesting thing about the bread of life, it's kind of like you eat the bread of life, then that bread of life will sustain you. You know, like you eat bread so that you stay alive. And if Jesus is the bread of, maybe we could say the bread of eternal life, you want eternal life, that's going to be sustained by him. It's an interesting thing. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Jesus just offers this amazing gift and it's just free, you know, by believing. You just believe in him and he gives you this gift.
It's really amazing.
Okay, I think that's enough of a ramble for the day. We covered everything from trombones. I think I want to title this ramble Trombone Scam. I think that would be a fun name. We'll call it Trombone Scam because I got a pretty good laugh out of that. So I suppose we will ramble at you sometime soon. If you like these ramble sessions, feel free to share with your friends. I would be happy to ramble with more friends who are out there. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you. Later.